Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
Now, firstly, I said we'd look at the business and some other stories that are making the news this morning. Delighted to be joined by Lorcan Allen of Keating & Associates and Joan Mulville, Digitalisation Lead at Siemens. You're both very welcome to the programme.
Morning, Bobby.
Morning, Bobby.
Now, Lorcan, we might start with you. Trump is all over the news. He's in Scotland. Von der Leyen is heading over there tomorrow to meet him. 50-50, according to Trump, in terms of a tariff deal at 15%. What do you make of all this, of what's going on?
Yeah, I was watching the news last night and Trump speaking to reporters when he got off the plane, and he made those comments about 50-50. I think it's probably higher than that. He's obviously he's playing the game of getting his deal. I would be hopeful we will see some sort of announcement tomorrow of a deal between the EU and the US. And obviously businesses on both sides of the Atlantic will welcome that, because there's been a lot of uncertainty for the past 6-7 months now since Trump took office. What's on the table, and it has been clear for some time, there is no zero for zero tariffs here. There is going to be tariffs permanently. It looks like 15% will be the tariff rate between both sides, and that will run across quite a lot of different categories. So we are living in a new era of tariffs again in Europe. We won't have free trade maybe that we've had on some certain areas. So yeah,
it's amazing, is it not, that if we had said that a tariff of 15% was going to be applicable 3 or 4 months ago, it would have been totally heinous to even mention such a figure.
Correct, yeah. It's interesting. I mean, there's been a lot of learning, I suppose, from the European side on this. I have a friend who actually works for Mara Sefcovic on the trade team, and she was telling me how they had been to Washington at the start of the negotiations, and the US side took out a big black book of all the grievances they had with the EU. And she's worked for the EU all her life and a European citizen living in Brussels. And she said when they actually started going down through them, she had to agree that there was a lot of things that, okay, fair point. So that's where the negotiations started from. There was realization from the EU that things had to change maybe on trade. So look, I think if we can get a deal, it will give certainty back. It will help investment. It will help trade. And that's what's needed, because the last 6 months have just been very difficult for everybody.
Joan, there's an interesting piece by Paul Colgan in today's Irish Times talking about, you know, the people at the coalface here. We're talking whiskey makers, cheese producers, you know, and what they're doing and how they feel, how these tariffs are going to be made, how they're going to work around them.
Yeah, this is a really good piece. I think in broad terms, I agree with Lorcan, obviously stability is good, but one of the big challenges of this has been for smaller size businesses. I think Enterprise Ireland are working incredibly hard. I have friends who work there, and I know that this has really put it up to a lot of their client companies, and particularly smaller producers, but really established brands like Cashel Blue. I have to call out, Sarah Furno was interviewed in this for this piece, but she's the, I think, CEO there of Cashel Blue. She said, "This climate makes you think with agility, makes you realize nothing is stable or constant. It's a time to reach out, to stay in contact with those we know in the US, for this will pass." So they're obviously looking at diversifying. They are looking, they're doing more with the UK. They're doing more with France and other countries and looking at Australia. These are all, it's forcing them to think differently, but also maintaining those relationships that they have, because this too will pass. Obviously, whiskey has been in the headlines a lot in relation to this. I know that Eoin O'Cahain, his director of the Irish Whiskey Association, said they didn't want to become the face of it.
Yeah, and rightly so, I think.
And rightly so, I think. And I think there were some other underlying issues in the whiskey industry anyway. There was an awful lot of distilleries have come up over the last number of years. There was going to be some degree of consolidation. I think this has put a little bit of additional pressure on that. But one of the things that's not talked about as much, but is adding to the problem for all of them, is not just the tariffs, it's the weak dollar. So you put the, you know, current exchange rate in on top of
117, I think, yeah, it is at the moment.
So that is exacerbating the problem. And as I say, food, small producers like chocolate, cheese, whiskey, they are under more pressure. But it's a really good article.
Just on another point, just Joan, on that, Lorcan was, this Sarah Furno, the CEO of Cashel Blue, she also said that big cheese producers such as Lactalis and Savencia have already rushed to build production in the US. So this is really fulfilling what Trump wants. He wants to get production, you know, focused in the US. And that's actually what's happening here.
Yeah. And like any of those multinational businesses, yeah, as she points out, you know, they have the scale to do that. But that's happened in food. Those case studies are given there. It's happened in pharmaceuticals. A lot of the big US pharmaceuticals kind of telling Trump, we're going to build here to try and appease him. We're going to build new factories and facilities and production campuses. So that's kind of what he wants, is to bring back some of that indigenous. So that's how to keep him sweet.
And just before we move off this, Joan, there's reference here to Northern Ireland, where the tariff rate is agreed at 10%. So that looks to be a vehicle or a potential vehicle for Irish companies to export through there.
An interesting gateway and so an advantage of Brexit, finally something coming out of it,
yeah,
having a slightly different jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm. Let's move to Cliff Taylor. Joan, he was very unimpressed and underwhelmed by our summer economic statement last week, I think it was. But he's saying that Ireland's $102 billion manifesto is for multinationals. This is addressed solely at them.
Yeah, I think it was really interesting for when I was reading it, the idea of calling it a manifesto, it reminded me of Jerry Maguire. It was a mission statement. It's not so much a plan as it is a manifesto of capital expenditure projects, you know, tackling stuff that we have been shying away from a number of years, that, you know, around electricity, around housing, and the fact that we are well behind, 20 to 25% behind infrastructure standards of other comparable but slightly richer EU countries. And it does, you know, that does really matter to multinationals who are making decisions. But the bigger issue for me in the play in all of this is there was some great lines around, you know, that there's very small margin for error in some of these capital projects. I mean, one of the things that we have done is shown that we are not great at managing margin for error in major capital projects. And again, there was a calling into question some of the figures that were in there. So the manifesto plan is based on 6.3 billion euros. But the economists are now forecasting that we're only going to have 2 billion. And the plan has not been adjusted to reflect that. So, you know, you have to at least base it on some kind of reality.
I don't know what you thought, Luca. I was totally underwhelmed by it as well. Vague on detail. No tariffs actually taken into consideration. And addressed clearly at one sector, which was the multinationals. And you know, major things that need to be, I suppose, talked about and bottomed out, left very much in a vague place.
Yeah, Cliff pointed out here that, you know, the government is trying to react to multinationals who've become, you know, normally they kind of take the good neighbour approach. They're quiet, they don't make any comments here, but they've become increasingly vocal about the problems in Ireland and why it's becoming increasingly difficult to invest here. And we've seen our FDI pipeline is in a weak enough position at the moment. So the government is talking, this government has talked a lot about infrastructure. They're trying to, you know, I've heard people saying that they want to be a government of delivery, but there's a lot of talk about infrastructure. There's nothing actually being built at the minute,
yeah,
or even, you know, we've a long way to go. And Cliff Taylor really points out that there's 102 billion projected to be spent over 5 years here. You know, there's
We're still unsure where
they're going to build it. How is that going to be delivered is not straightforward. Like, it's easy to announce these things on the steps of government, but to deliver them, and we have shown that we are not good at delivering in this country on big infrastructure.
Joan, I want to move to Intel. It's a significant employer in Ireland, has been a real champion of employment and innovation over the years out in Leixlip. It's going through very difficult times. And interesting enough, there's some comment around an investment that we missed out on here in Ireland going to Germany that might have actually been a blessing in disguise.
Yeah, this is a really good take on what's going on in Intel. And I think it's so a lot of people think of Intel in the sense of it's under pressure because of NVIDIA and AI and, you know, its chips not being the gold standard so much anymore for what's coming down the track. But it's more to do with the change of leadership. And Lip-Bu Tan is the new chief executive there. And he wants a very fundamental change of direction. And he feels that spending and investment in large manufacturing sites has been excessive in the past. And he wants to really row back in on that. So they're looking, I mean, some phenomenal numbers on cutbacks, reducing the number of management layers by about 50%. Yeah. I work for a large multinational. 50% of management layers. That is a big number. But they employ nearly 5,000 people in Ireland. A number of those jobs now are vulnerable to compulsory redundancies. That is very significant for those 195 individual humans who have mortgages and bills to pay and all of that. And that should be a real story for here. But I think it's a bigger picture of what's going on globally. I think one of the things with Intel as an organization that's interesting too is they're almost like the gold standard of how to do manufacturing, you know. So it almost, the pursuit of that nearly competed with the pursuit of making the best chip. It's about being the best makers. I think that can maybe dilute their strategy or confuse their strategy maybe over the years. But yes, to your point around about our loss previously being in fact our gain. So we did famously lose a big project to Germany a number of years ago, and we got what was perceived at the time as the scraps we won the Fab 34 project. I mean, that was a huge project. And I was just saying it to Lorcan beforehand, we'd love to get the project manager of that doing some of the capital expenditure projects in the manifesto from the previous article. At least we know they know how to deliver. But that project has been delivered. But what is interesting is the one that we lost to Germany has been stalled.
Yeah, which was a 30 billion investment. And despite heavy subsidies from the German state, the project was paused in 2023, leaving the new plant now in limbo.
Mm. And Intel is it's faced a funny challenge in that the US is obviously very worried about the China-Taiwan situation, and there is a growing expectation that in some time in the next decade, China may invade Taiwan, where most of the world's leading semiconductors are produced. So there has been this goal to bring semiconductor manufacturing home. And Intel has almost been charged with doing that and building these foundry things. The Biden administration would have asked Intel to build foundries, but they're incredibly expensive things to build. And I remember one analyst telling me before that, I mean, yeah, somebody's got to build these plants. I just wouldn't like to be an Intel shareholder while this is happening. And the new guy has come in and said, we're not going to do that anymore because it's too expensive. There's no return. And actually, we've got loads of plants, including in Ireland. The Leixlip plant recently opened. It's not even up to 50% capacity yet. I was only down there last October. So there's plenty of capacity within their existing infrastructure rather than spending billions and billions and billions building more. And that's how this guy thinks he's going to turn around Intel's fortunes a bit. So, I mean, rationalization, not spending crazy sums of money on trying to solve the world's geopolitical problems. A commercial company at the end of the day.
Joan River Island warning that their stores are on the brink. Now, this may be a kind of a public renegotiation of their rents through the Irish Examiner as it is here, but they're saying that if rents don't come down, they're facing a catastrophic situation as a group. I think they've got, is it 24 outlets in Ireland?
24 in Ireland.
Yeah.
When I saw this headline, I was like, well, what is this? It's another UK retailer, high street brand going, we've lost, you know, over the years, Oasis is gone, Topshop is gone. You know, Debenhams, like, it's just another one. I think they probably have a strong negotiating power to a certain extent because there's no one coming in behind them to take over these retail spaces. So if I'm a landlord for some of these guys right now, I'm thinking, do you know what? It's probably worth doing a deal with them on the rent. They do probably have to come down. As I say, retail generally has had a pretty good season. The weather has been good and apparently retail is up in fashion retail for River Island. So, you know, it's hard to plead poor mouth when you're having a good year.
Yeah.
But long term, I think they're probably in a good bargaining position.
It's a real challenge for landlords as well, is it not, Lorcan, in that, you know, you're being told that the tenant can pay less rent. And do you make a decision to cut that rent or take less revenue and then, you know, potentially they could go out of business anyway? It's a difficult call.
It is
for the property owners here.
It is, and River Ireland's argument of why it needs to restructure its loans is based on rising costs of doing business, kind of weaker sales. But equally, for the landlords as well, they also have to grapple with different costs like that as well. So, I mean, it kind of goes back to the sort of fundamental restructuring of the high street industry and how it works and how we're going to. And for landlords with high street properties, it's still much figuring out where the future lies because e-commerce is still eating away at the likes of River Island. And
yeah,
Rugger.
And there's bricks and mortar evidence of, you know, major shopping centres being worth significantly less than what they were So that's also there, the capital values.
Got to say, though, huge props to the French government for now banning, making it illegal for fashion influencers to promote Shein. So some of the really nasty human rights standards around some of those clothes producers and environmental custom. It's now not legal in France anymore.
Didn't know that.
Social media influencer for fashion. So some of them might be stemmed back into the stores.
Now, Lorcan, I don't know if you'll be tuned in for the big final tomorrow.
Absolutely.
But if you are, what about the story behind O'Neill's? What a wonderful company. Darren Olin is telling us about it today in today's Irish Independent.
Yeah, brilliant feature by Darren Olin in the Independent today. It came up on my phone this morning. It's the pick of the features in today's paper, given that the All-Ireland weekend is on. A lovely interview with O'Neill's, and what a great Indigenous success story here. Like, you know, textile manufacturing, there was a history of it here in Ireland. It has largely, it is practically all gone. But O'Neill's, 1,000 people working in Strabane in the O'Neill's factory. A brilliant story. And at the heart of it as well, I think, is O'Neill's is a very innovative company. A lot of innovation there. I mean, you know, from the big counties like Donegal and Kerry having their jerseys made. And obviously he's visiting the factory this week where all they're making are Donegal and Kerry jerseys ahead of the big game. But I mean, they also cater so well to the small clubs and all around Ireland where, you know, if my own local club, we can get on their website, design your own jersey. And that's really puts the power back in their hands. Yeah, and a very clever, very innovative way. And then those jerseys are produced. And it's a great way of, you know, I suppose defying the move towards lower cost production of textiles, that you can have 1,000 jobs in a fantastic company with a great brand here in Ireland. And yeah, it's a lovely, colourful feature, I have to say.
And also, Joan, just on that, interesting enough that, you know, the calendar, you know, we think about the calendar of changing the All-Ireland dates, for instance, you know, which there was.
Yeah.
But people like O'Neill's, it makes a significant dent in their business. In terms of, you know, how important the calendar is in terms of their production and their demand.
I couldn't believe the short turnaround time they had for the jerseys this weekend. But it's the detail of the meticulous personalisation of everything and the entire vertical integration as well, like from dyeing to, you know, finishing, stitching, everything. It's just, oh, it's phenomenal. It's great.
John, when I have you there, the government's digital wallet to store licences and records on smartphones. This seems like a good idea.
It does and it doesn't.
Right.
I said, I need a set of handcuffs and attach them to my phone. I've literally put all my life eggs in one basket. More things on my phone. Like, it's just, I mean, I think it's great and it's really efficient. And of course, we should be doing this.
So now if you lose your phone, you're going to lose your driver's license as well.
Big, you know, digitalization. But Lord above, I was just panicking going, where is my phone? And how can I literally surgically attach it to myself now? Because I can't do anything without it. Like, you know, your bank is on, your boarding cards, your booking references, your email, like absolutely everything. And now my real stuff, like beyond banking. But your licenses, your health records, like, holy moly. Like, I mean.
What are your thoughts on this, Lorcan? It's a system as part of an EU initiative and could be launched by the end of the year after positive feedback.
Yeah, I mean, it's the continuing digitization of the economy and our lives and the way we do business. And look, it does make our lives easier and simpler. And in all aspects of how we, whether it's work or day-to-day lives. I mean, this makes sense on every front. We already use digital wallets for so much of what we do. We pay through our phones and everything. You know, when you're introducing something like this, cybersecurity obviously has to be key because, I mean, when you have everything like that in one place, the opportunity for identity theft
the
or whatever.
Go right up.
So that's why, brilliant, bring it in, but we also need a similar strategy that the cybersecurity that's behind this is strong enough that we can protect our because these are very sensitive things we're talking about here.
The multi-factor authentication is going to be multi.
Yeah, no, it's you lose the will to live sometimes. Now, end of the supersonic dream, the Air France Concorde crash, 25 years on, which effectively was the end of Concorde. It didn't end for a year or two after that, but I suppose it is an anniversary. It caught my eye this morning as, you know, something that was really iconic of its time, supersonic travel. It never worked commercially and struggled all the way along because, but, and then eventually it just became, it was just switched off.
I think, reflecting on the time, I was living in London at the time. I was in my 20s. So there's my timestamp. But it was iconic. I think reading the article, what's lovely about it is the drama that he has managed to put into this article. I'd never really fully understood, probably in the flashing of time and being in my 20s as well, just what actually happened that day. And he does describe it in very specific detail. And then when there was a very sad and chilling moment where I think it was Kay Burley said, the captain said nothing in his final moments. No mayday. No instructions, just silence. He knew there was nothing to be done.
Yeah.
Chilling. Like, it is a dramatic story and it's very sad. And I think, you know, it's good to go back and reflect on it. I think at the time when you mentioned that it wasn't commercial, immediately I thought of all the broligarchy now and I'm going, should they be buying it all the time? And I'm going, no, everyone flies by. If you've got that much money now, you fly by private jet.
Hmm. It goes back to her, and I don't know whether this is our, because we're an island nation, but whether it's like Titanic, there's a romance of travel that we have in this country. And like a lot of this piece is 25 years on from Concord. Like, there's a nostalgia for these types of kind of iconic ways of traveling that.
There's a bit of glamour and a bit of prestige and a bit of style about it.
You know, you didn't like, what's the reason for this piece like? But it is kind of like, it evokes memories for people and that nostalgia, as I say, of something that never worked and will never, you know, be introduced again. But
plus it was a brilliant piece of engineering.
It was the technology and engineering, like Titanic as well, that people remember. And then, of course, ended in tragedy as well. So people have that attachment to it remember that.
And it also so tells you that, like, everything has its era, you know, that there's a time for it to be prevalent, a time for it to soar, and then almost a time for it to end.
Yeah.
And that's what we have here.
Mm-hmm.
All right, then. Well, let's look at how a short daily kip can boost your productivity. And also a quick tip can help surly teens. Joan, do you want to talk about the daily kip or the quick dip?
I don't have any surly teens and I wouldn't take a quick dip if my life depended on it. So I'm very happy to talk about taking a nap. I'm all for that. In fact, I share a creativity card most Thursdays on my LinkedIn. And one of them is take a nap, and it's how to boost creativity. And one of the cards I shared one day was take a nap. It is a really, really good and useful thing to do to help your productivity and your creativity. But actually, what I did not realize is, and until I read this article this morning, is that it can actually lengthen your life.
And it delays brain aging by up to 6 years.
Brain aging by 6 years. Well, when I say extending my life, that's the bit I mean. As I said, it was John Borman, the director, who said, we're not living for too long, we're dying for too long. And to keep your brain health for that, for those extra 6 years, well worth taking a little power nap, disco nap, cat nap, whatever you want to call it.
Lorcan had a lovely dip in at Dunleary Baths in Dunleary yesterday, and it reinvigorated me for the day.
It does, it does. It's always like freshens you up. I was up in Portrush at the golf last weekend and we had a good night on the Sunday night afterwards. And the next morning I said, if I jumped into that dip there now, I would be fine, good to go for the rest of the day.
All right. Well, thank you both for your analysis of the business and some other stories. Indeed, thanks to Lorcan Allen of Keating and Associates and Joan Mulvihill from Siemens. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.